Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up. Yay!
This time, Diana's in Great Britain.
Yes.
And I'm in New England. How fun!
I'm in England and you're in New England. That's wonderful.
Where the pilgrims first landed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, cool.
We landed in Provincetown. There wasn't a whole lot of resources in Provincetown, so they took off for Plymouth, but they first landed here.
I didn't even know that. Look at that. Learning new shit every day. And Erin looks, you can't see her, but I'm going to describe, she looks windblown and beachy. It's great.
Beachy.
Tomorrow I'm going to Cornwall. So for those of you who listen to King Lear, yikes. I'm going to the territory of the nasty eye-putter-outer.
Eye-putter-outer.
Yes. All right. Shall we dive in? We are in the second episode of Measure for Measure, and we're about to meet a very key character.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about her, Erin.
Well, her name is Isabella, and Harold Bloom.
Oh, yes.
Of course, don't have my Harold Bloom with me because I'm at the beach. But he called her, God, it's escaping me now. It's not neurotic, but it's like that because she is, you can read into her all kinds of things. She's a great blank canvas in a way, but she is becoming a nun. So she's becoming a novice. She's committing her life to the nunnery, which we talked about nunnery and whorehouse, right? And she's a great standard bearer for nunnery / whorehouse because every time men look at her or hear her speak, they just want to fuck her. And she is committing herself to the order of St. Clair, I understand it, they don't interact with the public. They don't interact with men at all. And she is like, well, that's just not enough. I want more strictness than that. She's this, on the one hand, very pious, devout preacher. And on the other hand, all she has to do is walk into a room and automatically men are like, you know, like hungry wolves.
Yeah.
It does make one wonder if the reason she wants to, you know, commit herself to a life of, you know, in the religious order is to escape that kind of response that she gets from men and what her life has been like up until now that maybe caused her to. But at any rate, I think Shakespeare is playing with the idea of whore and nun in a very interesting way because it's like, she's neither whore nor nun, but whoever looks at her chooses to put her into one of those boxes.
Oh, I like that. I like that idea. That she is only as she is perceived, depending on who's
correct.
Looking. Yeah.
Who's doing the gazing. Male gaze versus nun gaze. But yeah. And I think that, you know, she herself struggles with inner complications, which we'll get to as we go forward because she is devoted to the people she's devoted to, but she also is devoted to her God. And there's more to her than meets the eye. I mean, I think she often gets played as this like sterile, innocent creature. And I don't think that's who she is.
Yeah, and it's not interesting to play her like that.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Because then you're also giving the men in the play all of the agency.
Yeah, so she needs to be involved / responsible in some way for how she's perceived. I mean, we have to understand that that doesn't come out of nowhere.
Right, exactly. Claudio says it, you know, she opens her mouth and men give in. And I think maybe, you know, as her brother, he's seen that firsthand.
And it must be weird and uncomfortable.
And how she's used it to get whatever she, you know, I mean, I don't know. It isn't clear. Shakespeare hasn't given us, he hasn't given us a lot of information about her past. You, when we were performing this play, did bring up that the word incest is smack dab in the middle of the play.
And I don't think that's, you know, that's not a word that you can just sort of gloss over like, oh, that's not there for any particular reason. I mean, I just don't think so. You know, it's
right.
A big buzzword, no matter what time we're in.
Right.
But the Order of St. Clair, I looked into that a little bit more because I was curious.
Yeah.
And as we said, they are the strictest order of nuns. They are into extreme poverty. They walk barefoot. They don't eat any meat. They don't own any property. They started by following the teachings of Francis of Assisi. And then they just went from that, you know, like extreme poverty. It was founded by this woman, obviously, named Claire. And there's a sort of dramatic story about her because she was 13 when she went to St. Francis of Assisi and asked him, please, to take her in to the monastery because she was escaping an unwanted marriage. She was promised in marriage and she ran away from her home. Then her sisters, two sisters, and her mother also joined her order once she started it. And there's this dramatic story of her father with the men in his family coming and trying to take them back by force. Because he was like, so no fucking way is this happening. All the women in my family have abdicated to this nunnery.
That's why Shakespeare chose the Order of St. Clair.
Yeah, because I think there's a parallel story, you know, with Isabella and the men in her family. Yeah.
Exactly. Which is why the word incest is smack dab in the middle of the play. Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It has to be, you know. And this was also a common theme in the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. Women trying to escape their families and going to nunneries because of unwanted marriages or unwanted attention from the men around them. And whether it was their, you know, it wasn't their fault at all. It was just that the whole interactions between men and women were so strict and so many rules about them that the men probably went just as crazy about it as the women did. I mean, you know, like not that the women went crazy, but that the women were powerless to allow themselves some pleasure without serious consequences.
Serious consequences. But also, you know, think about in those days, marriages were not love matches. They were business deals. And if you were a female, you were basically the property of your father if he was alive. And if he had died, your brothers, you were the property of your brothers, who would then marry you off for their benefit because you couldn't own property. You couldn't inherit money. You couldn't, you know, so like, you know, you were really at the whims of the patriarchal system, and you had no say in your destiny, in your life. And the only way you could escape was by going and claiming, I am devoting myself to God, right? Because that was the only other option. And even then they could come after you.
Yeah, as is proved by this story. And this is something that we always, always have to keep in mind when we're looking at the women in Shakespeare's plays. And when we have situations like Lady Anne in Richard III, where, you know, why the fuck would she give in to this crazy maniac who killed her father-in-law, killed her husband? Why would she marry him? Because she had zero other choices.
Yep.
Besides going into a nunnery. So you have to always keep that in mind because people go, what the fuck? Why? What is wrong with these women? They didn't have choices.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So we have to remember that.
I think that if Isabella is Claire, or, you know, is modeled on Claire, there's a lot to unpack in this play.
Yeah. So very cool context to be able to understand it.
Yeah.
All righty. But before we hit Isabella, we have one more scene with this tricky Duke Vincentio. And we're going to find out a little bit more about what his plans are for what he's going to be doing while Angelo is reforming his town.
Reforming in quotes. Yeah.
That's what he was charged with, but we'll see how he does. How's that working for you? And yeah. Vincentio, Duke Vincentio, right off the bat, you'll notice that his language is very sexual. I mean, it's no wonder his town is like a debauched and messy place if he's the guy in charge.
The Duke of Dark Corner.
Yeah. He's a slippery little dick that's just fallen out.
Anyway. But also, absolute power corrupts absolutely. No checks.
Nope. So he needs to be reformed more than his town.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, when we get to the end of the play, we'll talk about the patriarchy and how Shakespeare fucks with us at the end of this play. But, like, we'll get there.
Yeah, so we're kind of like the Barbie movie here, where we're, you know, giving you fluff up in the front.
And then we're going for the jugular.
Yeah, and then we'll go for the jugular at the end there.
Was America Ferrera great in that speech or what?
Yeah, that was an excellent speech. If y'all know what we're talking about, the Barbie movie.
Go see the Barbie movie if you want to know.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. How did we draw a parallel to this play? I don't know. It just came out of my brain.
Because patriarchy.
Okay. Yes, it was patriarchy. All right. You ready?
Yes. So I'm reading Friar Thomas.
Yes. Random friar who doesn't return. I think the other friar at the end, it's Friar Peter at the end. So there's a bunch of different friars.
Interesting. Thomas and Peter are both also names that are used to refer to penises.
Yes. My John Thomas or my Peter.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you were going to say they were disciples, but yes, they are that too.
Well, that's the difference between how your mind and my mind work.
No, I had all of those things in there. Okay. Act 1, scene 3. A monastery. Vincentio. No, Holy Father, throw away that thought. Believe not that the dribbling dart of love can pierce a complete bosom. The dribbling dart of love. What else is that but a penis that has just slipped out and is oozing spunk everywhere?
Meanwhile,
I mean, come on.
Woo! Dribbling dart of love!
He's just having a fun time with everybody over here, you know?
Yeah.
And so can pierce a complete bosom, meaning a committed bosom. Like, don't think that love is going to change my mind, okay? Because probably the friar is trying to go, I don't think you should do this. It's not a good idea. Remember that they're coming in mid-conversation, so they've already had a little bit of back and forth about this.
Yeah.
Why I desire thee to give me secret harbor hath purpose, more grave and wrinkled than the aims and ends of burning youth. I mean, come on. Like, grave and wrinkled sounds like the old guy's penis, right? And then we've got burning youth. We've got the young guy with some kind of disease, right? So what he's actually, you know, what he's saying on the surface is why I want you to take me in has a reason that is more serious, right? Grave and wrinkled than just the fluffy, you know, reasons of some young man. It's not that. I have a very important reason for wanting to do this. But that's not what it sounds like. It sounds all about dicks.
Yep.
Okay.
And Friar Thomas, may your grace speak of it?
My holy sir, none better knows than you how I have ever loved the life removed and held in idle price to haunt assemblies where youth and cost and witless bravery keeps. I have delivered to Lord Angelo, a man of stricture and firm abstinence, my absolute power and place here in Vienna, and he supposes me travel to Poland, for so I have strewed in the common ear, and so it is received. Now, pious sir, you will demand of me why I do this. here again, in the first scene, he said about, like, he doesn't like being in front of people, right? So he's reiterating that here, the life removed. I've always liked being separate from other people, held in idle price to haunt assemblies. I don't like hanging around crowds where youth and cost, you know, where young people and costly clothing and braggadocio is rampant, right? Witless bravery, like people are pretending they're brave. So he's like, I don't like being with the crowds. I have given Angelo my strict power, my constraint, and firm abstinence. He's a man who doesn't have sex, so he should be able to do this. And he thinks that I'm gone off to Poland because that's what I told everybody. Now, why would I do this?
Friar Thomas, gladly, my lord, tell me.
We have strict statutes and most biting laws, the needful bits and curbs to headstrong weeds, which for this 19 years we have let slip, even like an o'ergrown lion in a cave that goes not out to prey. So notice again that he takes back the we, the royal pronoun, and we have statutes, that those are laws or decrees that are made by a sovereign. And they're biting, they're very severe. And now he's bringing in a horse riding metaphor. The bits and curbs are like the reins that hold something back. So he's talking about the horse, like him holding back the community to headstrong weeds, because horses that would lead themselves, or like the people that would just take themselves in any old direction if you didn't make sure that they're going in the right direction. But he says that for 19 years, they have not used these strict statutes. And he's making a comparison to a big lion that has never left his cave to go out and eat. No, as found fathers, having bound up the threatening twigs of birch, only to stick it in their children's sight for terror, not to use, in time the rod becomes more mocked than feared. So now he's making a comparison to a father who ties up a bunch of twigs, telling his children he's going to beat them with it, but he doesn't actually ever do it. So after a while, they go, yeah, yeah, sure, right? They don't actually believe that the beating is coming, which is the same as the people of Vienna don't believe that they're going to be punished for doing bad because they haven't been, right?
Boy who cried wolf.
Yeah. So our decrees, dead to infliction, to themselves are dead. Dead to infliction, meaning never used. They've never inflicted anything on anybody, right? And liberty plucks justice by the nose, mocks justice. The baby beats the nurse. So the things are all upside down and inside out. And quite athwart goes all decorum. Athwart meaning, you know, in opposition. And all the rules have gone out the window.
And Friar Thomas, it rested in your grace to unloose this tied-up justice when you pleased. And it in you more dreadful would have seemed than in Lord Angelo. You could have done it all along.
Unloose, set free, right? Employ. You should have employed this justice. And it in you, you, your person, being a duke, would have made it seem like, you know, scary and people should obey if you had just done that. You have more eminence than Angelo. And the Duke says, I fear too dreadful. I'm too scary. But he's not. Sith 'twas my fault to give the people scope, 'twould be my tyranny to strike and gall them for what I bid them do. So scope is freedom. And so he's comparing freedom to tyranny, right? He would have looked bad for punishing them for things that he allowed them to do. It would gall them. It would make them feel resentful. So he made this whole show and talk about how he doesn't like to show himself to the people and all this stuff. You are absolutely right when you said he just wants to be popular.
Yeah.
Because this is like bullshit.
Yes.
Yeah. For what I bid them do. For we bid this be done when evil deeds have their permissive pass and not the punishment. I made this come about by not punishing it a long time ago. Therefore, indeed, my father, I have on Angelo imposed the office, who may, in the ambush of my name, strike home, and yet my nature never in the fight to do slander. So, in the hiding behind my name, he'll be able to, like, jump out and catch the evildoers without me ever being in the fray.
I don't gotta get my hands dirty.
Mm-hmm. And to behold his sway, I will, as 'twere brother of your order, visit both prince and people. his sway, is his rule. I will. He's not going to be persuaded otherwise. He's not saying, could you help me? He's like, I'm going to do this.
You will help me.
Yeah. And I will visit both princes. I'm going to disguise myself as one of you guys, and I'll be able to watch high-status people and low-status people, because friars are kind of like fools in that way. They cross over status, right?
You know?
They're allowed to interact with.
This feels like he's a voyeur. Like, there's sexual pleasure in his. I don't know why that popped into my head just at this minute, but it couched in all this sexual language. And his determining to do it, it's almost like he's not doing it to see who's good and who's bad or how to right wrongs. He's doing it because it's pleasurable to spy.
Yeah, I definitely think he gets a lot of seedy jollies out of being able to, you know, go into anybody's house and ask them questions. This disguise gives him that license.
Of any nature, he can ask any question because he's under the cloak of God and goodness.
And so people are going to make that assumption when they look at him. So here's a great case of seeming. You know, we've used that word before and pointed it out in Shakespeare's words, and we're actually going to get it at the end of this scene. Seeming is when you look at somebody and you make an assumption based on their outward show.
Yeah.
Right? So people are going to see him coming and say, oh, I can tell him anything and he won't tell anyone.
Right.
Because that's the nature of confession.
He'll help me lead a better, more holy life. Meanwhile, he's probably off in the closet thinking, that was really good.
Yeah. It's so creepy. So now he's going to give him some instruction. And we see that the friar's not even going to answer after this, right?
Yeah.
So, therefore, I prithee, supply me with the habit and instruct me how I may formally in person bear me like a true friar. So just give me the clothes, show me how I'm supposed to. Bear me is literally the physical attitude of a friar. He just wants the picture. He just wants to look like one.
Yeah.
He's not asking about like exactly what do I say to people to make them feel comfortable. He's not asking for that.
He doesn't care.
He's just saying, I want to look like it.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. More reason. And again, he's in a hurry. And he just uses his high status authority to make people do shit that they probably don't feel entirely comfortable with. You know?
Yeah.
Angelo and Aeschylus are still over there reading through his, you know, instructions going, I don't know about this. Right? And this poor friar is shaking his head going, I'm not really, I don't want to do this.
This is bad.
Yeah. Tough shit. So, more reasons for this action. At our more leisure shall I render you. Only this one. Lord Angelo is precise. Stands at a guard with envy. Scarce confesses that his blood flows or that his appetite is more to bread than stone. Hence shall we see if power change purpose. What our seemers be.
Rhyming up.
So Lord Angelo is precise. He's rigorous. Precise is rigorous. He stands at a guard with envy. That means he controls himself very, very vigilantly. He doesn't even like want you to know that his blood is flowing or that he has any appetites for things more than stones. You know, like he hardly lets his emotions show at all. With this disguise, I'm going to find out what happens to people when you give them power? That's what he's saying. If power change purpose, what our seemers be? I want to see if he gets corrupted by power. But in the same way, he is taking on, the Duke himself is taking on a different kind of power because he's taking on a disguise that gives him a whole different power. And what about him? He's going to become corrupt with that power.
Right. Well, I mean, the whole thing is so icky. I had a thought, but it left my... Yeah, so I think maybe he's trying to put his own thoughts about his own behavior to rest. Like, everybody's just as bad as I am, and I'm going to prove it by adopting this disguise, and I'm going to catch people being as bad as I am. So I'm not a bad guy. I'm not bad.
Then I'm not bad by comparison because I'm not bad with all the other people who are bad.
It's just, it's just human nature. That's what we do. We just take advantage of our power. And so, you know, I've been feeling kind of badly about the fact that I have abused my power. But in fact, I'm going to find out that, like, I don't need to feel bad about it because everybody does that. And if everybody does it, then that's fine.
Right. So power is going to change a couple of different people, not just Angelo, in this crazy play. So let's move on to Isabella and see what it is that she wants from this world. She wants to give up power, supposedly.
Supposedly.
All right. Act one, scene four. A nunnery.
Or a whorehouse. All right, Isabella. And have you nuns no farther privileges?
Are not these large enough?
Yes, truly. I speak not as desiring more, but rather wishing a more strict restraint upon the sisterhood, the votaress of St. Clair.
Knock, knock, knock. Oh, peace be in this place. That's Lucio. Yeah. So she's, what is she asking for?
More. Keep me more locked up. I don't want any more privileges. I want less privileges.
Yeah, that's all she gets to say to this nun, Francisca, before, again, they're coming in mid-conversation, but one gets the sense that she has barely just entered the doors. She hasn't been around for very long. Novices had to hang out for a while and learn the ropes before they were invited to actually join the sisterhood. Okay, so Lucio knocks at the door, and Isabella?
Who's that which calls?
It is a man's voice. Gentle Isabella, turn you the key and know his business of him. You may, I may not. You are yet unsworn. When you have vowed, you must not speak with men, but in the presence of the prioress. Then, if you speak, you must not show your face. Or, if you show your face, you must not speak. He calls again. I pray you, answer him.
Yeah. And off she runs.
And off she runs. She's like, yikes, yikes. Out I go. But I like that in these her first lines, gentle Isabella, actually, you know, it's gentle, but it's also gentle woman. Like, you're still a noble woman until you take those vows.
Yep.
So you are allowed certain things and I'm not allowed. But I like this, turn you the key and know his business.
Business.
His business. Size up his dick. Come back and tell me if he has a big one. You know, she must have given that up a long time ago, and now she's like, I forgot what they look like, those men. So there's the rules, and Isabella's like, oh my god, okay, and goes to the door.
She says, ciao, peace and prosperity! And then, who is that calls?
Hail, virgin, if you be, as those cheek roses proclaim you are no less. So this is Lucio, and I love the word if. If you're a virgin, I'm not sure. You know, lots of people go into nunneries for different reasons. Yeah. But then he says, as those cheek roses, your blushing face proclaims that you are a virgin. Can you so stead me as bring me to the sight of Isabella, a novice of this place and the fair sister to her unhappy brother Claudio? Love that antithesis. The fair sister, unhappy brother.
Why her unhappy brother, let me ask. The rather, for I now must make you know I am that Isabella and his sister.
Gentle and fair, your brother kindly greets you. Not to be weary with you, he's in prison.
But, woe me!
So again, the word gentle, yeah. Right? Sorry. The word gentle, again, gentlewoman, you know. Oh, you know, like he realizes he's speaking to somebody more important than just some random nun. And then he's also in a hurry, right? He's like, I not to be weary. We gotta run.
We gotta move.
He's in danger.
Well, me? For what?
For that which, if myself might be his judge, he should receive his punishment in thanks. He hath got his friend with child.
Friend being
lover, yeah. But if I was his judge, I would totally just go, yeah, you did great, buddy. Off you go.
Sir, make me not your story.
Don't tease me so you can just go talk about it to your pals later. Don't do that. And Lucio cuts her off. It is true. I would not, though 'tis my familiar sin with maids to seem the lapwing and to jest, tongue far from heart, play with all virgins so. I hold you as a thing enskied and sainted by your renouncement an immortal spirit, and to be talked with insincerity as with a saint. And then there's 6 beats of silence because Isabella is like, the fuck did you just say?
Yeah, right.
But I really love this. So Lucio, I wouldn't play with you like this, though I usually do. It's my familiar sin, my usual practice with maids to seem the lapwing. Now, I love this. A lapwing, you know, we've talked so much about bird imagery in Shakespeare, and Aaron loves the birds. Mm-hmm. A group of lapwings is called a deceit.
Mm.
A deceit of lapwings. Isn't that cool? And they were apparently thought to be dishonest creatures because they feign injury when they're threatened. They're like, oh, that's why they're called a lapwing. Oh, my wing is broken. Oh, I'm hurt.
Can I also just say, if you're reading this and you don't know what a lapwing is, it sounds vaguely sexual, like lick, and lap is where your genitals are, and labia are often referred to as wings. I don't know. It just feels a little sexual.
Yeah, and then we get tongue far from heart.
Exactly.
By which he means I usually say things that I don't feel when I'm talking to women. But I'm not going to do that to you, because this is how I think of you as a thing in sky. You are sacred, like a star up in the sky. But yeah, I think that whole first phrase contains so much. It's so incredible. When there are specific things like, you know, saints, particular saints that Shakespeare uses, or particular birds, you should always look them up and wonder why. Why did he say lapwing instead of swallow? Swallow would also have been sort of a sexual reference, you know? So always be curious. Be curious. That's the best way to be about reading a text of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
All right. So I think you're this incredible thing, right? And then he leaves this, you're like a saint. Isabella leaves 6 beats of silence before she's like, yeah, fuck you.
But I want to go back for a second, because teachers and students, when you ask why we read Shakespeare still in school, it's what Diana just said. It's to spark curiosity, to learn, to research, to find the humanity. It's like, it's many, many different things. But I really do think that there's something about being curious. That's what education should stir in you.
Let us hope. Otherwise, what do we have left, you know? Instagram stories. All right, Isabella the Saint, off you go.
You do blaspheme the good in mocking me.
What is blaspheme?
It's going against God. I'm saying it's cursing. It's
using his name in vain.
In vain, right, exactly.
And Lucio, do not believe it. Funis and truth, 'tis thus. Your brother and his lover have embraced. As those that feed grow full, as blossoming time, that from the seedness the bare fallow brings to teeming foison, even so her plenteous womb expresseth his full tilth and husbandry. Boy, oh boy. He says fewness and truth first. Fewness is less words. Don't worry, I'm going to use less words. And then he just like bleh, all of this stuff. All these plant, you know, metaphors. The seedness is the seeding time, and the bare fallow is the field with no plants. So seeding time brings that bare field into teeming foison. Teeming is overflowing. Foison is abundance. So he's making the comparison of the bare field becoming rich with plants, same as her plenteous womb. The womb of this woman that they haven't even identified yet is plenteous, bursting with the abundance of his full tilth and husbandry. That's unbelievable. Tilth is like tilling, like plowing something, plowing her with his penis. And husbandry, obviously, has the word husband in it, but it's all about managing the growth of a farm. So in any case, that was not less words.
I wonder if his intent is to say less words, but then he's like, oh God, she's saintly and she's pure, and the way I normally talk is going to be offensive to her. So how can I say this without using words that will make her uncomfortable? If I use farming metaphors, for instance, maybe she'll get the idea without me having to, you know, say, and so maybe that's why he like keeps spewing, because he's trying to get his point across without offending her.
I love that. That's perfect. You're absolutely right. And I didn't even think about it that way, but yes. Yes. So he's like, I'm plowing. Yes.
Filth.
Like, that helps, because that really sounds like filth, and yeah. You know, especially followed by, after the word full.
Yeah.
Full tilth.
Yeah.
Is filth.
Yeah. And so here's the interesting thing. So he has this whole like blithering, blathering, like, oh God, how do I tell her this? Oh God. And then she comes right out, cuts to the chase with a knife. Someone with child by him? My cousin Juliet?
Is she your cousin? Yeah, he's like, ew, gross.
Adopted.
Why is Claudio screwing his cousin?
Right.
That's not cool.
And she's very quick to say, no, our family just adopted her. Like, adoptedly. Yeah, right. As schoolmates changed their names by vain though apt affection.
Change is exchange, right? Vain is silly. Apt is genuine. You know, so like girls do this. They go, oh yeah, she's my cousin. Or, oh, she's totally my sister. It's just something like that.
Yeah, we were very close.
It's pretend. And Lucio's like, yeah, it's her. She it is.
Oh, let him marry her.
This is the point, right? So Isabella's like, well, just what the hell? Yeah. Why are you telling me she's pregnant? What's a big deal?
Right.
You know? And Lucio's like, yeah, it shouldn't be a big deal. But then he goes on to explain. The Duke is very strangely gone from hence, bore many gentlemen, myself being one, in hand and hope of action. But we do learn, by those that know the very nerves of state, his givings out were of an infinite distance from his true meant design. Okay, so here we have it. Lucio says that he bore many, that the Duke bore many gentlemen in hand and hope of action, which means that he took along with him a regiment of soldiers for a potential war.
But that's a lie.
If he did that, that was supposed to be the intention.
Yeah, that's the rumor he's spreading. The Duke.
That's the story that he's spreading, right? Because Lucio said if the Duke with the other Dukes doesn't, you know, come into an accord, then we're all going to war. And they had that talk about the soldiers.
Yep.
But then he says, but we have since learned that from people that have their finger on the pulse of the kingdom, like those that know the very nerves of state, that his givings out, his published pretense, was way far from his real intention. So what his real intention is not said here. But in any case, he ain't going to meet with a bunch of dukes, and there is no war with the King of Hungary. So that was very far from the truth. But meantime, now he's going to explain about Angelo. Upon his place, and with full line of his authority, governs Lord Angelo, a man whose blood is very snowbrock. His blood is melted snow, right? One who never feels the wanton stings and motions of the sense, but doth rebate and blunt his natural edge with profits of the mind, study, and fast. If he feels any kind of wanton is lustful, motions of the sense, he doesn't get any hard-ons. He just doesn't get them. If he even gets like the sense of it, then he does rebate, which is pulls back, and he blunts his natural edge. He wills himself out of those things by studying, fasting, you know, all of these things. So he's like, this guy, there's no getting around it. You can't make him feel anything. Mm. And then he, Angelo, he, to give fear to use and liberty, which have for long run by the hideous law, as mice by lions, hath picked out an act under whose heavy sense your brother's life falls into forfeit. He arrests him on it and follows close the rigor of the statute to make him an example. So this is what he's figured out. He wants to give fear to use and liberty. He wants to scare people who would break the law, because these people have run by, evaded this law like mice run by lions. So he's picked out one statute, an act, one statute that he's going to prosecute to the full extent of the law. So he's, your brother's sin has fallen under that act. And so he's been arrested about it. And Angelo is following close the rigor of the state. He's observing with strict thoroughness this statute, and he wants to make an example of Claudio. Mm-hmm. All hope is gone unless you have the grace by your fair prayer to soften Angelo. I love that. You take his hard dick that he's like so jazzed about fucking your brother with this thing, and you got to soften it. And that's my pith of business twixt you and your poor brother. That is the essence of what I am here to do.
Doth he so seek his life?
Hath censured him already, and as I hear, the provost hath a warrant for his execution.
Alas, what poor abilities in me to do him good?
Assay the power you have. Censured is sentenced, right? So he's already sentenced, and he's going to be executed, and Isabella's like, what the fuck? And assay, Claudio used this word about her, about how she, you know, approaches people. Assay is a military word for attack. She's like, use your power.
My power. Alas, I doubt.
Our doubts are traitors. He cuts her off, right? Our doubts are traitors. I love this. I have it tattooed on my arm, literally. Our doubts are traitors. That means when we doubt, we betray ourselves. We have to believe in ourselves. And make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt. So we lose the thing that we might gain by not even trying. So you've got to go try. Go to Lord Angelo and let him learn to know when maidens sue, men give like gods. When maidens ask for things, men will like bestow things as if they were gods. But when they weep and kneel, all their petitions are as freely theirs as they themselves would owe them. Suing is asking, but weeping and kneeling is like being on your knees and crying and begging. All their petitions, anything they ask for, is given to them so freely as if they already owned it.
I'll see what I can do.
But speedily. So he cuts her off again, like, hurry, you've got to hurry now.
I will about it straight. No longer staying, but to give the mother notice of my affair. I humbly thank you. Commend me to my brother soon at night. I'll send him certain word of my success.
I take my leave of you.
So she's saying, I'm just going to tell the mother I'm outie. That's as long as it'll take me. And then, you know, you tell my brother I'm coming, I'm going to Angelo, and I'll send him word.
Of my success.
Right, of my success.
She's like, I will do it.
Right, well, he's a man of God, I'm a woman of God, I'm come to some kind of understanding.
Yes, an understanding. But I like give the mother notice of my affair.
Yeah.
That's also jumping the gun, like, hmm.
Yeah. So I wonder in her head at this moment, is she like, okay, so on the surface, it's like, he's a man of God, I'm a woman of God, we do the right things. I think if I go and I ask him, he'll, you know, whatever. But I wonder if the undercurrent, even though people say there's no subtext in Shakespeare, I wonder if the undercurrent in her brain isn't like, well, it's worked before. If I just walk into the room, maybe he too will, you know, have that same. That's why, you know, affair and success. Maybe it's because she knows the effect she has on men.
And Lucio said, this is your power. Use your superpower.
He says, I take my leave.
Right.
And she says, good sir, adieu.
All right. Adieu. Adieu.
God.
To God. Yes. To God I go. Yeah, that's an interesting last word.
Yep.
Adieu.
Adieu.
They're not in France, after all.
Correct.
So off she goes. The next time we'll see her is confronting Angelo. That's for next time.
Yeah.
So we had just a couple of little short ones to introduce you to Isabella today.
That was fun.
Alrighty.
All right, I'm going to the beach, bitch.
Yeah, you go to the beach, bitch. Stage is set. We're ready. For next time, we'll see you guys when we get off the beach. Yes. All right. We wish you all beautiful summer days. And
also, just a little.
Yes.
I just want to do a little plug here. So I got a book in the mail called Shakespeare Unleashed, and it's short horror stories based on Shakespearean sonnets and plays. And it's got some great writing.
Fun.
And I'm enjoying it enormously. So that's what I'm reading while I'm at the beach. Shakespeare horror.
Excellent.
Yeah, 'tis excellent.
All right, little shout out.
Yeah. So I'm Erin.
And I'm Diana.
And this has been
A Fuck Shakespeare.
Measure your dick to my dick.
Yes.
Yes.
And the power of nuns.
Slash whores.
Slash whores.
Okay, bye!
Tally-ho!
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.